You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, Houdat Nation, and welcome to the Dome Patrol Podcast.
Hey, what's up, Houdat Nation? Thanks for joining us on the Dome Patrol Podcast. This is the official Saints podcast of the Fans First Sports Network. And this is the episode of the week where we talk about the new NFL rule changes. Trying something different. What do you think?
No, sir. I didn't like it.
Right. On this episode, we have Wesley and James. Once again, Jason has the week off. So I guess he stayed up too late at the bar with Damon earlier this week. So he's hungover, we'll say. He's going to miss out. This is actually one of my favorite things of the offseason, is to talk about the rule changes and the things that the owners will vote on and that type of stuff. It does mean that we're getting a little bit closer. We're about 1 month away from the draft. So only a few episodes before the big live stream draft night party, which we do need to start talking about and promoting. So consider that promoted.
I do believe it is a week, a month from today, date-wise, the 26th of 26th of April.
Yep, the day that we're actually recording this one. So, yeah, we're going to talk about the NFL rule changes that the owners voted on. The first thing I think we can maybe talk about is, well, easy and simple. Coaches get a third replay challenge, but they have to have won or successfully challenged at least one of their previous two. Is that right? So if you challenge and miss twice, you don't get a third. Is that how it works?
Correct. You'd have to get one of them correct. Yes. You'd have to get one of the challenges. You'd have to win one of them to get a third.
That's kind of, does that mean basically, so is that preventing coaches from just throwing challenges at anything? It's incentivizing you to be right?
I mean, I think it comes up because there's a whole lot of plays that were wrong last year by the umpires that got overturned. But then later in games, you're finding more plays that people didn't have challenge. Like, it just seems like with all the technology we have, if we can get it right, let's get it right. Like, obviously I'm no longer on the flow of the game, blah, 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 because they play a million commercials. College football was terrible this last year, where they did all the things to speed up the game. And then they added, the games were longer because of the commercial breaks.
They sped it up so they could sell more ads.
Right? Yep. 100%. And then they oversold the ads to make the games actually longer than they ever have been.
Right.
So yes, I want flow of the game, blah, blah, blah. I want the calls correct.
And this does seem less about right. It's not about incentivizing you to challenge correctly, but as much as it's not penalizing you for a good challenge. You know what I mean? Like, if you throw a flag and you get it overturned, you shouldn't be penalized for that. It's like, you know, I need that call back. Like, I need another flag because y'all gonna fuck me again.
One thing that's not kind of tied in or not written in this, though, is like, you don't get challenges once you're out of timeouts, right?
Oh, yeah, because they cost a timeout if you're wrong. Yeah. Yeah.
So for teams like our favorite team that like to do timeouts on fourth down before punting or on first down when it doesn't make any sense, those timeouts, like, you're not going to have that third challenge if you're wasting timeouts either.
Yeah.
So there's also a kind of a.
So we won't actually benefit from that rule change. Got it.
Right.
That's what I'm picking up. All right. Next one is
Saints never benefit from rule changes. We should know this by now.
From challenges or just the rules they're officiating at all. Period.
Yeah.
So this is another.
That's the only one of the plain rules that was brought by a team All the rest are competition committees.
Okay. Which, yeah, the first of which is that the offense can now be assessed a penalty for major fouls, like unnecessary roughness type things, where on plays where the offense throws an interception or loses, or where there's a turnover, even if the foul took place before the change of possession.
Only if the foul takes place before the change of possession.
Okay, so describe the situation then.
Say it's the Falcons. Offensive lineman goes and face masks the crap out of a defender as the quarterback's holding the ball. Quarterback throws an interception, and then a defensive player blocks somebody in the back. We could have a face mask and a blocking in the back, and they offset, and none of that ever happened.
Do you replay the down in that situation, an offset like that? Like, does the offense get the ball back?
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. It's just restart.
Yeah, play over. Offsetting penalties.
Okay. So what happens if the offensive lineman commits the face mask, you throw the pick, there is no defensive penalty. Then what?
Well, that means that's...
Does the
intercepting team get an additional 15 yards? They would decline the penalty and take the interception. This is saying you would be able to still... The major foul would still be personal foul.
Who benefits from this?
The defense. The team that gets the turnover now also gets the penalty.
The scenario that you just said, Jeff. Yeah.
It would be offsetting, but then I don't know. Maybe we need to look at that. So maybe the 15-yard penalty would count. The offense would still have the ball, but they would lose the 15 yards from the face mask or personal foul.
Because it says here, like possession, even if the foul took place before the change of possession and the defense also committed a penalty on the play.
Yes, so you commit a personal foul, throw an interception, and then there's a holding on the return.
Holding on the return screws over the defense.
Personal foul, the intercepting team, right? Right. No, if it's after the change of possession, I thought they had changed that a few years ago where this was a major foul and this was a little foul. We're taking the major foul. But now they've been offsetting, like a 15-yard penalty and a 5-yard penalty have been offset. Well, let's move on to number 3.
Yeah. Okay. Next one.
We're all confused.
Right. I'm more confused. It's got to be on a day that ends in Y after 3 p.m. with 7 seconds left in the third quarter. If the offense commits a penalty before throwing an interception, then the defense gets to decide whether they want to kick one of the offensive players in the nuts.
That's not a real rule change.
Well, it was voted on, but it didn't pass. So this is replays can now be used to overturn a ruling that the quarterback was down or out of bounds before throwing a pass.
Yep.
Simple. Self-explanatory. Good decision. I'm assuming it's also this down or out of bounds include also past the line of scrimmage. Not that it happens a lot in the NFL.
Different. That one's been reviewable.
Okay. So this adds to that. Okay.
Yep.
If I'm the offense, I'm going to challenge that my quarterback was down. If that benefits me from the defense. If you were down and you threw the touchdown, then you could say they were down.
The offense is ever going to be able to challenge it because the referee is going to say, I blew it dead because he was in the grasp or going to the ground or close enough. Like I'd already blown it dead. So it doesn't really matter. So
yeah,
like I blew it dead. So it doesn't matter that guy caught it 3 seconds after I blew it dead. Well, I blew it dead.
This is overturn a ruling that he was down or out of bounds, meaning you said I was down or out of bounds. I say I was not.
I think it's the other way. I think it's the referee saying, oh, he got rid of the ball before his knee touched the ground. He completed the pass.
I don't see why because, I can't go both
somebody,
ways. Because
if somebody blows their whistle, it doesn't matter what happens after. It doesn't.
Yeah, but why can't it go both ways? Like, yeah.
Because you blew the whistle. I mean, if they don't blow the whistle, then that's fine. That works out.
Whistle! Oh, you Ted Lasso fans know what I'm talking about. All right. Replays can now be used to determine whether the game clock expired before the ball was snapped.
Makes sense.
Does this count the play clock too?
That's what it's talking about. Play clock.
They're talking about the play clock.
I guess. Yeah. Play clock. Because
how many times do you watch a game with the play clock's going in the corner and the ball has not been snapped when it hits double zero?
A lot.
Well, the one thing that they used here in the wording is that it's when there's clear and obvious. And this is like, that's one thing that they've always talked about is it's, well, the way that the referees do it is they watch the ball snap. And if they look up, does it have to be snapped a full second after it expires versus a quarter of a second.
Think about it, you have the last milliseconds to run off as well, right? When it hits zero, you still have the milliseconds to get to zero. So you still have like a whatever that is.
Zero is 0.7 for at least a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is something that always.
That's what they're going to have to change that. They're going to have to change it to the NBA clocks with the decimal.
Yeah. Well, because also the other thing to think about is when we're watching on TV and you see the play clock, like unless they're showing the camera of the clock on the field, but even the clock on the field or the clock on the TV is not the official clock that the refs are holding. So it's not 100% accurate either. So I do agree, like if a fans are seeing zero and then the ball is snapped pretty much as it hits zero, that doesn't always mean that it was actually at zero, but the fans get worked up over it. So I think this could be one that kind of tricks you up where the coach thinks it was zero, throws the challenge, loses the challenge, lost the timeout, and then we don't get our third challenge. And you just get double whammied because your quarterback was out of bounds.
That's always, to me, something that could have been controlled by somebody who is not on the field. Somebody in the stands or in a booth with a clock doing it that way. That could have been controlled from there. But
I think they should like just say, yeah, the ball should just deflate as once the clock expires.
Explode.
Yeah,
explode. It should explode.
Here's the next one. Hip drop tackles are now banned. And critics of this are saying that this is further, this is more like pussification of the NFL.
Well,
in favor
of an
offensive minded, high scoring, a desire for high score, like that defense isn't allowed to play defense anymore.
Well, when you say critics, let's go ahead and say critics are every single player in the NFL, even ones that have been injured by the hip drop tackle.
Yeah.
They don't want this to be a rule.
And then proponents of it, non-players, are looking at it where 20 to 25%, it's like the number of injuries from these types of tackles are 20 to 25% higher than injuries from other types of tackles. So like it is apparently a high injury tackle relative to other tackles. But what if it's like 7 injuries? You know what I mean? Like, what's the number? They say, oh, it's 25% more. Well, yeah, 50% more than one. Do we have a real issue here? Or like, what's the deal?
No. And I really liked what like Emmanuel Acho said. He said like his exact quote was like, there is no such thing as a hip drop tackle. A hip drop tackle is just a tackle. And like, you can't just keep
right.
Like if I'm running behind somebody, you now cannot grab their collar and you cannot
grab onto
their body and like throw your weight on them.
So how, like a cornerback,
a cornerback on Derrick Henry has no way to tackle him from behind. Like you're going to be a backpack. You're going to just have to jump on him and hope that he trips.
But wait, you also cannot, right? You cannot dive at him. You have to wait till he's looking at you. There's so many rules now on how to tackle. I mean, it's
just like, weird who that the competition the committee is making a rule. It's just weird the competition committee's forcing this through when every single player that we've heard from about it says they don't want this. Offense and defense.
How are you supposed to tackle? You have to go up to somebody, gently wrap your arms around them, pick them up, cradle them, and lay them gently to the ground?
I have to go up and ask permission first.
You have to get consent. This is true, well, James.
Yes, then, you have to get consent. Yes.
What is funny is like players like Jonnu Smith, who is an offensive player, says, hey, NFL, we don't mind the hip drop tackle, but can we do away with turf fields? So like if we're talking about safety, what do you think made more injuries last year? Turf fields or hip drop tackles?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the numbers, but it's not even close. We don't even have to go look up. It's definitely turf fields.
Good point. Yeah, this one's. I have a feeling this one might get flipped back around. I don't know. Maybe it never will because they don't ever like to ever admit.
I mean, they're not going to listen to the players. I mean, it's not like the players are only coming out against this afterwards. Like they've been saying since this was brought up. Like, stop it.
You think it has? Yeah, it has. I mean, clearly they're looking at it as we've got to stop injuring our players. And maybe our problem is that we are looking at them as, oh, you're hypocritical because you care about player safety. It's never about player safety. It's about protecting your financial investments. Players are financial assets to these teams. And if I have a high priced asset playing football, I don't want that asset to get injured to where it cannot produce on the field. So I'm not protecting the player out of some care for the player's emotional or physical well-being other than my pocketbook. It's an asset.
The whole player safety thing's bullshit, because on the same day they announced that they're going to be playing a game on Christmas Day again this year, which is a Wednesday. Yeah. So it's not even a Thursday. So, you know, Thursday games are bad enough.
Well, maybe they'll give them a bye week the week before.
They have to have a bye week the week before. Like, you can't play on
Sunday.
You
cannot play Sunday.
But then that late in the season. Because what's that? That's week 16? Yep.
15.
Yeah, they 15, had bye 16. Weeks pretty late last year. The bye weeks ran pretty late.
It probably is 16. Yeah.
Yeah, week 16. The whole player safety thing is.
So maybe it's the Thursday. Maybe it'll replace the Thursday game.
They're not giving up Thursday.
Nope.
By that point, are you in where? Yeah, college football's over to where they're playing on Saturdays. Maybe it's a Saturday team that plays on a Wednesday. I don't. Yeah, this is going to be interesting how the schedule works out for that. But I really hope we're not one of those teams. I've seen a tweet here
where they put the schedule up. So December the 25th NFL game. December the 26th NFL game. December the 28th, NFL games. 29th, NFL games. 30th, wow. NFL game. December the 31st is college football quarterfinals. And January the 1st will also be college football quarterfinals. So there's going to be a week of football over Christmas, there's going to be a game every day apart from the 27th.
I mean, and I ain't complaining about that, but, you know.
But, you know, the player safety thing, and to Wesley's point before, the more people got injured on turf fields than they did get injured by tackles. It's player safety is not at the forefront of the NFL's thinking at all.
It's like the TSA. It's the illusion of safety.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Kickoff rules have also changed. So basically
this is the big one.
Right. So the XFL kickoff rules. All right, so somebody explain it, because this is like one of those like triple stamp, a double stamp kind of kickoffs where the kicker's by themselves.
So yeah, the kicker is at the 35-yard line that they're kicking from.
That's normal, right? That's where they normally kick from.
And for the purpose of this, we're going to say offense, the kicking team and the receiving team. The kicking team is lined up at their own, across at the opponent's 40-yard line.
Right. Yep.
And the receiving team is lined up 5 yards away from them at the 35-yard line. So 10 players are lined up 5 yards apart. The kicker is 25 yards
away
behind them, kicking over their heads.
Right.
And the ball has to land between the goal line and the 20. It has to be fielded there. Right. There's one. Oh, you can have two returners back, right? So it's not 10. It's not 10 on 10.
But he cannot, like, he has to kick it in bounds. Like, he cannot kick it in the end zone?
No, he can kick it in the end zone. Then that's a touchback.
Okay, so if it flies over the goal line, it's automatic touchback. So let's say I'm the receiver.
It has to get to at least the 20-yard line.
Yes.
But I'm saying, like, if I'm the returner and I catch it in the end zone, can I run it out?
Yes.
Still?
Yes.
Like, back in the... Yes. Okay. I didn't know if there was like an automatic touchback at this point.
Nope.
So I can run it. Okay. So then it doesn't have to go in between the goal line. It has to go from the back of the goal to the 20-yard line.
And it has to, like if we're talking about like where it goes like out of bounds or it's right real close, it has to, the free kick would have to land and touch the ground in that landing zone between the goal line and the 20, or touch the receiving team player. In that,
okay.
So, like, you could.
So, is this remember the rules they changed about the kickoffs way in the back was to prevent injury, quote unquote.
Because you didn't want the two teams getting a 30-yard head start where they're sprinting at each other and just banging each other. So they're 5 yards apart, so they can only
It's about those players being safe, not the returner.
Yeah. It's about the blocking player and the tackling player running each other. Less about it's not very often that the returner is just ran through by a tackler.
It's the
two blocking people running into each other.
Is this going to lead to more?
It changes special teams completely, in my opinion.
Yeah, is this going to lead to more touchdowns on kickoffs?
100%.
Yep, definitely.
Yes.
Because kickoffs now.
Devin Hester would have had 60 touchdowns in his career.
Yeah.
It turns it more into like a play because you've got the two teams that are lined up really close to each other. So teams are going to be able to get behind that kicking team.
Right. If you can get past that 30-yard line.
Hey, this is one of those things.
It's you and the kicker.
You get like three or four big athletic guys that can block all together on one side of the field, and you've got a super fast guy. If they collapse that side of the field, like, he's gone. In the middle.
I like
if you
this.
Got two guys that can just, you take that guy this way, you take that guy this way, and run straight up the middle. Like, I think there's going to be more special team specialists now, like guys who probably can't play linebacker, but they can run somebody, you know, through special teams.
But it changes the makeup of your 53, I think, as well, because you're going to probably want a different type of player the blocker.
Because
it's almost like a pass rush you need.
You can't be an offensive lineman because those guys aren't going to run anybody down. They can't go sideline to sideline. But you also can't be a cornerback because you're just going to get ran over. Like, it's going to be a ton of, like, seriously, middle-sized linebackers that are huge but also really fast.
Steve Gleason's in his prime.
Yeah, you think you need another 40 pounds. You need bigger than him.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, I think, because you're just one-on-one, 5 yards away. He's not dodging.
JT Gray.
Like,
he's just a bunch of JT Grays.
I think bigger than that. You need linebackers.
You're going to need linebackers.
Werners.
Like, Quan Alexander is like the size for this guy. The 6'3", 6'4", 250.
Fast and sizable.
Fast, but also can be physical, can make somebody, he can act like a running back and get around somebody that's trying to block it. Like,
this is going to be a fun experiment to watch.
Yeah, and some teams are going to be really bad at it, I think.
It also means that after a touchdown, an offensive touchdown, usually you might get up and go to the bathroom and you'll come back. You're not getting up. You're not going to miss that kickoff.
Well, we already have like one of the better returners in the game. And I think this makes your five best returners just became like way above the guys below them.
Yeah.
Well, who immediately got signed by the Steelers today?
Patterson.
They signed Cordell Patterson. The Steelers signed Cordell Patterson straight away.
He is. Yeah. Still, this will extend his career by a couple of years. Like, they need to stop having him as a running back.
Call Devin Hester out of retirement.
But I think the Saints are going to be in a pretty good position.
What's the beer man doing?
What's Michael? I was about to say, what's Michael Lewis? Oh shit, Reggie Bush.
The Saints are going to be in a pretty good position because Darren Ritzy actually is one of the four people who wrote this up.
Oh, nice.
So he will already be ahead of the game a little bit in terms of scheme, I guess, is what you're going to have to.
Well, and this is honestly like the kind of players that we are assuming are going to do well as the returner here, because we're going to need a second person to do it too. Those kind of guys are guys that do well in this offensive system that we are bringing in, like we're trying to pair people up and all that stuff. So I think,
do you think Taysom's going to be good?
You would think. Now, if I'm Dennis Allen, I'm gonna drive my car off a cliff, but other than that, I'm calling some XFL coaches to consult, like people who have worked in this for a little bit longer.
Calling Bob Stoops.
Yeah.
you can get the
is rock. The XFL happening? Like, I've not heard anything.
Yes, yeah, the USFL and XFL have combined to make the UFL. They are kicking off their season next weekend in Arlington, Texas.
Next weekend.
That's what I was saying. Like,
it's in Arlington, Texas, where the Renegades are the defending whatever, the Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl champion.
They're not the defending Super Bowl champion.
Whatever it's called.
No, I was saying, like,
Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl.
I didn't know.
Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl.
And didn't think that they had started the season yet, because I've heard nothing about it. And I'll be like, it's pretty bad if they had kicked off the season very soon. Gotcha. Okay. The next thing I did want to at least mention, not that this is huge, but like teams, this is kind of like, to me, like the Brock Purdy rule, right? Where teams can elevate an actual quarterback an unlimited number of times from their practice squad to list as their emergency third quarterback, just in case the first two get hurt.
It is this Saturday and Sunday, March 30th and 31st, by the way.
Oh, okay. It's this weekend. Cool.
Yep.
So that surely means that Jake Haener is probably going to be on the practice squad then.
Yeah. Yeah. It lets
you
put it.
Wait, you think he's going to lose the backup competition to Nate Peterman?
No, Probably not. No.
Well, one of them is on the practice squad, and it doesn't matter which one it is. All right. And then what's this one coming from? Like, where is this one coming from? Like, if an injured player is not traveling to the away game, you'd have to report that player before you leave.
I think that way you're not calling someone. What I'm assuming with this, you're not saying that someone is a game time decision and then they're three states away. They're questionable, but we're going to leave them back in
right. Like California, you can't play Sean Payton's will they won't they game.
Yeah. I mean, I think both of the IR rules, I think, are the two big ones here.
And then the last one that I wanted to bring up is this Hawkeye video technology that they're putting in the coaches' booths now. So I looked up, like, what is this Hawkeye tech? And it's basically, it's this wall of screens that they had in the officials' booth, right, where the officials can review and look at pretty much they're recording every possible angle that with all the TV broadcasters and all the different cameras. So you can see every play from every angle possible. And of course, that's the stated intention is that you get more calls correctly, especially when you're reviewing a challenge or something like that, which I am a little cynical about. But now apparently they're going to test it in the preseason only, that they're putting all these TVs in the coaches' booth, so the coaches can see all the angles and the screens as well, which I think is going to lead to more challenges.
Why don't they just have the coaches wear VR headsets?
I don't know. I mean,
10 VR headsets seems cheaper than this wall of video.
I don't know.
Oh, but you know what's interesting about this one? To us as fans, you know what's interesting about this one? Mm. Nothing.
Well, it is, because you've got some coaches who are going to be watch the field, and other coaches who are going to be coaching from a TV screen. And it's going to be interesting to see.
Does this make Mike McDaniel move into the TV room versus? Does this make Mike McDaniel move to the TV room instead of being on the the field with
he's like in his couch, like armchair quarterbacking.
Well, are they going to put a theater room in the stadium? Like, they don't even need to be up there with the window.
The sideline. They're going to set up a living room setup on the sideline and give the coaches
Xbox control.
You're going to have an Xbox controller, and you're going to actually play Madden. And the players just have to emulate. They're going to put chips in the players so that they do with the Madden, and then Madden becomes realistic.
I think the IR rules are the most interesting, though. I still think that.
Oh, the players coming back.
There's two IR rules that I think are smart and make a big difference. One, you know how in the past when you were cutting to the 53 and you had people that were hurt, you had to keep them on the 53 as the opening day people and then put them on IR. So you technically have two people that you're having to hide and hope and all that kind of stuff don't get picked up. Now you can dedicate two players when you're at 90, two players can be designated to return and go and put on IR before the 53. So you can technically have 55 people if you're starting the season with someone hurt. So it's only two of those. And then the other IR
rule. Hold on. To bring one of them back, do you need to remove another player then?
I mean, eventually, yes. Yeah, you still can only have 53.
But you can keep them from leaving. Yeah.
Correct. And then there's now an unlimited amount of players that can return from IR, which I don't understand why it was ever less than unlimited. Like, it's a very physical sport. And then the fact that you could have 15 people get hurt and you can only bring four of them back is just the dumbest thing ever. Like,
well,
get hurt and they can get there in week two and three and they can return 8 weeks later, they should be able to come back and play football. Like,
you'll have less people on IR because they're playing two hand touch now.
But hopefully.
You can't do the hip drop tackles. They've got really
hip drop tackles. Do we even need IR anymore?
They've eliminated it, right? I mean, of course. Unlimited. Who cares?
Because turf fields are still going to injure people. And Thursday night games and Wednesday games.
Yeah, it's from turf.
But teams like you taking somebody that is going to be hurt for 5 weeks and you're like, well, let's just keep them on the sideline. Let's not put them on IR because we have only this many people that can return. That's just dumb. Like, send people to go do their thing, put them as a whatever designation, let them come back whenever they're healthy. Like, it's the weirdest thing that
it allows more guys to actually play football.
Well, but But also, like,
taking up roster spots.
If you're telling me like a player could have come back and played the last 4 weeks, but some team didn't play the IR game right, one, you're hurting the team. You're hurting the fans that want to watch that person play, but you're hurting that player's ability to earn a contract by going like, hey, I was healthy for the last month of the season. I'm ready for training camp. And versus the team going, hey, we didn't see you play for the last 3 months of the season. We don't even know if you can walk. Why would we give you a contract? You missed three quarters of a year. Versus, no, I was healthy. We just didn't play the IR game right. So I think this, it's a real obvious one that it's weird that it took this long. But
and then I guess since we've talked about everyone except this one, which I wasn't going to bring up, but whatever, trade deadlines move to the Tuesday after week 9.
Yep. When was it before?
It was October 31st in 2023. So yeah, that was week 8.
It was the Tuesday after week 8. Now it's at week 9.
So you get an extra week for the trade.
Extra week to find out who's in contention, who's not. Also, I mean, this means a traded player cost is their salary is a little bit less. It's one less game check that you have to have to pay for.
Yeah.
Could promote more trades. Of course it won't. It's just going to be NFL trade deadline is like all this speculation and we need this and this is going to happen. And I mean, very few people get traded.
And nothing happens. Nothing happens.
Chase Young got traded. He won't this year.
He did. Hopefully he's playing by week 9.
Actually, you sit there and say that if the Saints are in third place in the NFC South and he's healthy, that actually might be a good trade chip.
I will say, also, Wesley, earlier this week on the Saints episode, you mentioned that we hadn't signed any offensive linemen to replace Ramczyk, but we do have Ali Udo.
Who played 2 games last year and was injured for the last 15 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
So, excuse me if I'm not penciling him in.
You're not giving him the job.
As the next All-Pro.
I think I'll take Ryan Ramczyk's knee over that.
Right.
Ali Udo. Okay. Final thoughts
about the rule changes?
Anything, I guess, but sure.
I don't have any about the rule
changes. All right. James, anything?
I have nothing.
All right, then that's all the show we have for you this week. We're going to thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week and telling your friends about the Dome Patrol podcast. Follow us on all socials. Just search for Dome Patrol Podcast. And don't forget, subscribe on your podcast app. Give each episode a 5-star rating. Give it a comment. Set up your auto download so you can listen to the Dome Patrol Podcast anytime, anywhere. Say bye-bye, fellas.
Watch Shogun.
The Dome Patrol Podcast is the official Saints podcast of the Fans First Sports Network.